Bill's not with us tonight. He's not feeling well after his trip down to California. So we're going to be going into a different study tonight, the study of the book of Hebrews. And tonight we're basically going to do an introduction to the class because that's where I was in my studying when I got to it. I think I find the background material of a book helps me understand the book a little bit better. Now, the only problem with the book of Hebrews is that if you look up the screen, I want to talk about the author, the date written, and the audience, and the purpose, that four of these is open to a lot of speculation. Three of the four is open to speculation. But I find it useful in this particular case to speculate just a little bit. And part of the reason is because it wasn't too long ago I was quoting from the book of Hebrews on the Lord's table, and I said that I thought that the author was Paul. And as I study this more and more, I come to question that a little bit. Because obviously, who wrote the book of Hebrews?
God,
the Holy Spirit, right? Holy men were moved, right, by the Spirit to write down. And they were inspired by God. So obviously God wrote the book of Hebrews. And Origen actually says in his writing, he says, only God knows who wrote it, right? And that's exactly right. Only God does know. However, I find the study of the author kind of interesting. You can look at internal and you can look at external evidence. Would it surprise you that the external evidence is mixed? That some believe that Paul wrote it. Some believe that Apollos wrote it. I think Bill Downey believes that Apollos wrote the book of Hebrews. Some believe that Luke wrote it. Some believe that Barnabas wrote it. There are a lot of people externally that believe that different people wrote it. So what does that tell you? That no one knows who wrote it. Because no one says definitively who wrote it. Now, it's interesting when we get down to the time or the date of it, we can kind of narrow that in pretty closely because there's some cues in the book itself, and there's some external evidence that one of the church fathers, they call them church fathers, quotes from it by a certain date. So we can get a good idea of when it's written. But I find it interesting to talk about the author because the book itself has got a lot of references. Now, by the way, if you were going to guess, who would you guess wrote it? How many would think Paul wrote it? No one thinks Paul. Oh, Robert thinks Paul wrote it. There's evidence in the book that suggests that Paul wrote it. At least two passages in the book sound like Paul. In fact, if you look at the way the book is laid out, how does Paul write his books? Theological and then practical. Is the book of Hebrews broken up into theological and then practical? Yeah, starting in chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we have such a great cloud, of witnesses, yada yada yada. Right up until you get to that point, Paul's talking, the author's talking all theology. So this book is arranged the way Paul would normally write a book. You get to the book of Romans, the first 11 chapter, it's theology, theology, theology. And what happens in chapter 12? I urge you, brethren, that you present your bodies as a living sacrifice, right? He goes straight into the practical part of his doctrine. He does that in many of his books. But there are things in this book which suggest that there are things that Paul does in every book that's not present in this book. By the way, does anyone else have a guess as who it is if it's not? Only Robert believes it's Paul. So if you don't believe it's Paul, do you believe it's someone else? You don't know, right? So it's either Paul or not Paul, right? Okay, so you guys are all in the not Paul camp, right?
Not necessarily,
just didn't raise your hand. Okay, so let's talk about this a little bit. So from earliest times, there's been a variety of opinions as to who's written the book. Clement of Alexandria and Origen. Clement of Alexandria is from 150 AD about to 215 AD. He's one of the early church fathers, they call him, who did a lot of writing. Those are the guys that were disciples of John, who did a lot of writing and did a lot of, we get a lot of extra biblical quotations of the Bible from them because they're doing commentaries on the Bible and they quote the books of the Bible. Clement of Alexandria did just that. Or no, Clement of Rome did that when we're talking about the book of Hebrews. He quoted from the book of Hebrews. It was around 325, the church historian Eusebius, in his History of the Church, referred to Origen's outlook on the authorship. In his work, he says, "But as to who wrote the book of Hebrews, the Epistle of Hebrews, God knows the truth of the matter." So the problem with not knowing who wrote it is that for a while there they doubted that it was even a book that should be in the Bible. So from the late 100s or so, up until about 325, 425 or so, people doubted that the book should even be included in canon. And it was actually Augustine and Jerome that, and you may be familiar with them, there were pretty heavy-duty hitters in the Roman Catholic Church. They're the ones that really came out and said, yes, this book should be in the Bible. They actually attributed it to Paul. So for a long time, it was attributed by the Catholic Church, and it would say the letter of Paul to the Hebrews. The thing is that the manuscript doesn't say that. It doesn't say, it doesn't say 1 Timothy like it does in Paul's letter, or it doesn't say anything like that. It doesn't say Pros Hebrews or anything like that. So we don't have a title of the book. But the content suggests that it was written to Hebrews. So that's what we call that. You were going to make a comment?
Yeah, I guess you're probably going to get into some of the internal markers, but
yep.
For example, the reference in chapter 2, verse 3, of being among those who heard it.
Yep.
So
I'll get to that.
That's because that's actually one of the reasons why they suggest it's not Paul, right? Let's see. So there are reasons why most believe it's not Paul. The first and foremost is that it doesn't have a salutation. If you go look at every one of Paul's books, what do you find? Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ. Paul, in fact, here, I'll read them to you. I've got them all written down. Let's see, Romans 1:1, Paul, a servant of Jesus Christ, called to be an apostle. 1 Corinthians 1:1, Paul, called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ. 2 Corinthians 1:1, Paul, an apostle of Jesus Christ by the will of God. Galatians 1:1, Paul, an apostle, not of men, neither by men, but by Jesus Christ. Ephesians 1:1, do you get the drift here? He almost always says Paul. In fact, that's like the first letter of every one of his books. He says, "Hi, I'm Paul." In fact, that was one of the standard ways of writing a letter. He would say, "Paul, a servant, Paul, an apostle," whatever he was trying to get, the point he was trying to get by about his own self. He would, in fact, James did that, right? James says, "James, a slave of God." Peter does it. All the New Testament books do that in one point, in one way or another. Matthew doesn't say it was written by Matthew. John does allude that it's written by John. Luke doesn't say it was written by Luke, but we get that idea from various things. But you were going to make a comment again?
Well, just when you're done, the counterpoint.
I'm not done. Go ahead. What's your counterpoint?
Well, the counterpoint is that Paul intending this to be read by the Hebrews, knew that his name amongst the Hebrews was not held in very high regard, and so he deferred from doing that so that he would not be a stumbling block. I'm just offering an argument.
No, but that's a great point, because actually it's in my notes. It is a great point. Do you understand what he's saying here? Paul was not well received by Jews. They thought he was a traitor. Even the Jewish Christians thought he was trouble. Because what was Paul preaching against? Circumcision. And many Jewish Christians thought that a non-Jewish Christian should be circumcised before they could really become a Christian. That's why Paul preached so heavily against circumcision. The Jerusalem Council in Acts 15, the whole book of Galatians is about that. It's about the idea that you don't need to be circumcised as a Gentile to be a worshiper of God. So Mike's point is that Paul was not well received by even Jewish Christians. That's quite an accurate thing. And so Paul may have purposely not put a salutation on this book in order to do it. Now, there are two counterpoints to that, is that in one letter, Actually, it's in more than one letter, but in 2 Thessalonians, Paul says, "See, I've written this with my own hand, and I do this in all my letters." In fact, the verse is 2 Thessalonians 3:17, "The salutation of Paul by my own hand, which is a sign in every epistle, so I write." So, did he make an exception? And could he have made an exception for this particular case for that particular reason? Absolutely. So, was it written by Paul or not, based on the fact that there's no salutation? It doesn't matter. Does it matter? I mean, you can see that even though there's no salutation, doesn't mean it wasn't written by Paul. Good job, Robert. I mean, raising your hand there. Let's see. There's another one here. 2 Thessalonians 2:1-3. "Now, brethren, concerning the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ, and our gathering together in him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. Let no one deceive you by any means." What do you think he meant when he said, or by a letter, as if by us?
Some were pretending to write letters from Paul.
Do you suppose that's why at the end of the book he said, I'm signing this by myself? And Paul didn't write all of his letters. He dictated his letters. In fact, you'll see that in a number of letters. The person he dictates to gets to say hi to his friends wherever they're writing to. I can't remember the exact name. Can't remember his name. The guy in Romans who does that. But he dictates his letters, and then at the end he signs them so that they know they're authentic letters. Apparently Hebrews doesn't have that. But Paul was concerned about forgeries. So if he was concerned about forgeries, he might have signed it. Now, is it possible that Paul did have a salutation on this and the salutation was lost? Possible, but not likely. Go ahead. That's right.
Both the introduction and the sign, the close.
Right. Except the close actually has a benediction to
it.
And we'll talk about that a little bit. Because the benediction is another reason why you might want to think it's Paul.
Exactly.
Because why?
Because the writer, if it be Paul, or whoever it is, adds that he looks forward to soon returning to be with them.
Right.
And secondly, he makes mention of Timothy.
Right.
And,
he makes mention of Timothy.
Brethren in Rome.
Yep. In fact, it says that he says, "Those from Italy greet you." Right. Which comes into, I don't have it up here, but where it's written is another one of those mysteries, right? So whether or not the salutation is from Paul is really immaterial. They could have taken it off when they copied the letter the second time. But both have evidence and non-evidence there that it could or not have been Paul. The second point is that this letter covers things that Paul never covered. This letter emphasizes things that Paul never emphasized. It emphasizes the Jewish way of worship. It emphasizes, Melchizedek. Three different times, Paul never mentions Melchizedek in any other thing. Draws attention to the Old Testament tabernacle, talks about how it's a shadow of the thing to come. That Paul never does that in any of his other letters. And he deals at length with Christ as high priest. And he didn't do that one in any of his other letters. Most of the time when Paul mentions Jesus, how does he call him? Christ Jesus or Jesus Christ. He almost always gives them the title with the name. The letter of Hebrews doesn't do that as much, if at all. You're going to say something?
In reference to the content suggesting Paul, there's a counterpoint against that, which is that nowhere in Hebrews do we have mention of the issue of circumcision, mm-hmm. which would seem to be pertinent to Hebrews.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. Third, the book of Hebrews quotes extensively from the Old Testament. However, it almost exclusively quotes from the Septuagint. Paul, almost in his letters, almost exclusively quotes from the Masoretic text. Now, that's actually a big deal. Why would a person quote almost extensively from the Septuagint and not the Masoretic text? By the way, the Masoretic text is what most of your Old Testaments are based on. So if you ever wondered why when you're reading an Old Testament passage that, like for instance, that Jesus quotes and it doesn't match up with what you've got in your Old Testament, that's because Jesus is actually quoting from the Septuagint as opposed to the what we would call the Old Testament, the Jewish written in Hebrew Old Testament. That's what the Masoretic text is. Why would an author quote almost exclusively from the Septuagint and not the Masoretic text? Because he doesn't speak Hebrew. He doesn't write Hebrew. That suggests that the author is actually not a born Jew, like Paul was. Paul studied at the feet of Gamaliel. He knows the Masoretic text, the Hebrew text, better. He quotes from it almost exclusively. That's not the case with this book. Which is an interesting clue, and that's on your not Paul side, that weighs pretty heavily in my mind, right? But you wouldn't notice that necessarily unless you started looking at the quotes that he's quoting and go back and compare them to your Old Testament. So just something to keep in mind. Paul would have been familiar with scripture in the original Hebrew language as a Pharisee. Let's see. Paul, and you mentioned over, and let's turn over to chapter 2 for just a minute. Chapter 2, verse 3, I think it is. Yeah. Chapter 2, verse 3 makes a really good point, too. I didn't have my book open to it, sorry. In chapter 2, it says, "Therefore, we must give more earnest heed to the things which we have heard, lest we drift away. For if a word spoken through angels proved steadfast, and every transgression and every disobedience received a just reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation, which was at first begun to be spoken by the Lord and was confirmed to those of us who heard him?" Confirmed to us by those who heard him. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. Confirmed to us by those who heard him. Did Paul hear Jesus Christ? Not in his earthly ministry, did he? Well, we can't assume that for sure, but he did spend time with him. In fact, 1 Corinthians chapter 11 says, "I received of the Lord that which I also gave to you," right? Where did Paul get his revelation about the Lord's Supper? Directly from Jesus Christ. It's in the book of Galatians also. It's in Galatians chapter 1, verse 12, "For I neither received it from man, nor was I taught it, but it came through the revelation of Jesus Christ." Where did Paul get his revelation? Directly from Jesus Christ. Where does the author of Hebrews get his revelation?
From those who heard it.
From those who heard it. It's secondhand. We get all of our revelation either from the Bible or we get it secondhand, right? So the person who wrote the book of Hebrews did not witness Jesus Christ. He was taught by someone who witnessed Jesus Christ, by those who heard it. So that's actually another, if you're going to weigh it against Paul, that's another one of the big ones that would weigh it against Paul, because Paul would have said, "I heard this straight from Jesus Christ," right? So something to keep in mind. The other thing we talked about in the salutation, the benediction, talks about Timothy. It refers to Timothy as our brother. Yeah. Was Paul more likely to call Timothy? What was Paul most likely to call Timothy?
My son.
That's exactly wrong. Actually, if you go do a book, if you do a Bible search on the name Timothy, when he's talking to other people, he calls Timothy my brother. When he's talking to Timothy, he calls him my son. The only time he calls him my son is in 1 and 2 Timothy. And I'm not trying to make a point of it or anything, but if you go look in fact, I did that search for you. If you go look in Romans chapter 16, verse 1, he calls Timothy my fellow worker. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1:1, Timothy our brother. Philippians 1:1, Paul and Timothy, bondservants. Colossians 1:1, Timothy our brother. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 2, Timothy, our brother and minister of God. Second Timothy 1:2, Timothy, a true son in the faith. 2 Timothy 1:2, Timothy, a beloved son. And Philemon. I've got two Phils in there. Timothy, our brother. So actually, Paul was more likely to call him my brother than he was to call him my son, especially when he's writing to someone else. So in the camp of whether it's Paul or not, that one could go either way, right? Is it likely that the person who wrote the book of Hebrews knew Paul? Timothy and Paul were kind of like this. So that's why they suggest that maybe Luke wrote it. In fact, some suggest that maybe they heard a sermon that Paul did and wrote it down. I don't give that one very much credence. It seems clear to me that if it wasn't Paul, and that's why I'm vacillating here, that it was someone who knew Paul, because he was in the same circle with Timothy. Now there's another verse in here that makes that when I was thinking about it, that so Timothy is one verse that I was thinking, yeah, this guy's Paul. There's another verse in here that makes me think that it was Paul. When he's writing about the fact that they were suffering persecution, he mentions something about himself. The author does. And it's over in chapter... Let me find it. It's in chapter 13, I think. In fact, I don't have it in my notes. I'm surprised I don't have it in my notes. It's either in 12 or 13 where he talks about being in chains. He says, "When in my chains..." Who else refers to his imprisonment as being in chains? Paul does, right? The author of Hebrews at one point in time was imprisoned. In fact, so was Timothy. And you only find out the fact that Timothy was ever imprisoned in the book of Hebrews, which should tell you something when we get to this next one. So, by the way, 13:3, go ahead and read that for me. Why'd you turn away from it?
Remember the prisoners as are chained with them, those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in the body of
God. Yeah, so actually there's another verse in there that says, he talks about his own chains. And I'm sorry, I meant to write that down.
I was reading this earlier today, just in preparation for something else, and I didn't trust
it. Yeah, and I'm sorry I didn't write it down, or if I did, I put it in a different part of my... different part of my notes. So does it matter who wrote the book? No, you just don't need to be dumb like I was and sit on the Lord's table and say that you think it's Paul, right? Was it Paul or not? God knows, right? However, in doing that little bit there, we get to know a little bit about the author, even though we can't pin him down. He was most likely a Hellenistic Jew, right? Because he spoke Greek. He was referencing a Greek. This was written in Greek, but he was referencing a Greek Bible. So he was most likely a Hellenistic Jew, like Luke was, or like Clement of Rome was, or some suggest it was Barnabas. Barnabas, I believe, was an actual Jew, not a Hellenistic Jew. So that kind of lets him off the hook. Yeah, some say Apollos, who was from where? He's from Alexandria, right? He was actually from Egypt. Some suggest that Priscilla wrote this book. How do you know that Priscilla didn't write this book?
Masculine pronoun.
There is a masculine pronoun used at one point in the book, and I didn't look it up. He's when he's talking about himself at one point. So it's not Priscilla. So does it matter? No, but I find it interesting. Dan? Yeah,
absolutely.
I started off with that.
So why do you think that God did make sure that the author of the physical author of Hebrews was identified? The thoughts of when you're studying?
What Lee said earlier. I tend to think that the book was identified at one point or another, or wasn't copied down because of who was going to be receiving the book. That's my own thought on it. Or that the author didn't sign it ahead of time because he knew who he was sending the letter to. But that...
I guess I was...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Because that's certainly a way man could
manipulate that.
Yeah.
But we know that God is the one that's in
control. Oh, sure, sure.
Okay, so I guess so my question is there anything in your study that indicates why God may have chosen to not allow this belief to be identified to a particular way?
Not really. In fact, if you go look at the end of the book again, did the people who received the letter originally know who the author was?
Yes.
Absolutely did. So if it was Paul writing, it wouldn't have made any difference if he wrote his name on it or not. The people who were receiving the letter knew who he was because he's asking them to pray for him. Pray for the letter, for the anonymous writer of this letter, please. that's not it, right? But Dan, to answer your question, no, most people just concentrate on who they don't think it was, as opposed to why God would have left it anonymous. And there's really no external evidence either. And the internal evidence goes both ways, if you ask me. So, I think it's an exercise, and you might think it's a stupid exercise, but I like to look at it and see what the book itself has to say. In order to do that, you have to understand what the book is. Mike.
And then, based upon the arguments that the author makes and the application of the Old Testament, which evidences to us by its surpassing wisdom that none other than the Holy Spirit could have been the source of it anyway.
Well, that's the same with the rest of the Bible anyway, right?
Well, but I mean, there are books that have pretended to be scripture that when examined showed the internal contradictions and inconsistencies that indicated it is not inspired.
Yeah.
This book.
And there are things about the Bible that we'll just never know, right? I mean, this is one of them. There are things that we'll just never know until that day, right? When we can get up to heaven, and then it might not even. Then we might be up there and think, "I don't care, I'm here," right? We may not care who wrote the book of Hebrews, but I will tell you one thing: when we get down to the purpose, the book of Hebrews is a masterful argument. It is from beginning to end a nonstop argument about how great Jesus Christ is. And how great he is compared to Moses, who was great. You know, when God talks about people in the Bible, how does he talk about Abraham? He says, Abraham was my friend. How does he talk about David? David's a man after God's own heart, right? How does he talk about Moses? Moses is almost above Abraham in the way that God probably is above Abraham in the way God looks at things. God spoke to Moses face to face. And he has, in fact, when we look at the first verse, it says in times past, God spoke to the prophets in various ways, right? In diverse ways. How did he spoke to Moses face to face. How did he speak to Solomon? In a dream. He didn't get that. How did he speak to David? How did God speak to David? Did God ever speak to David? Do you recall any passage in the Old Testament where we have David getting a dream from God? He spoke to Abiathar, and Abiathar had the Ummim and the Thummim with him so he could answer questions and stuff. But how did God speak to David? You know, so go ahead, Terry. Yeah, Nathan. Yeah, Nathan came to him and said, "You're the man," right? Right. But did God speak directly to him like he spoke to Moses? Moses is in Judaism, Moses is the guy, right? They say Abraham is our father, but they really worship Moses because that's how important Moses was. And we get to the end of this, the end of the matter. How important is Moses compared to Jesus Christ? Not important at all. He's a foreshadow. He's not even, he's a foreshadow of what's to come. That's all Moses did is he built, you know, when you're a little kid and you sat down and you built those little models of cars, or if you were a girl, you might have built dollhouses. I don't know what you did with it. Not a girl, but I built models of cars and models of airplanes because I thought they were cool. Did I think the models were cool? Or did I think the real airplane was cool? I thought the real airplane was cool. If I could only build a little model of a ship, well, that's okay. I'd rather have one of the big ones. right? That's what Moses is. He was just building the little model of what really is out there. You go read the book of Revelation. It talks about the what's going to be in heaven. Uh-oh, I can see my time is almost up. Yep, I'm running out of time. Time. Speaking of time, when was the book of Hebrews written? You can bound this on two ends. On the latter end, it's 95 AD. Origen quotes from the book of Hebrews in about 95 AD in his first letter. So we know it was not written after that. How many of you think it was written before that? It was written before that. How many think it was written before 70 AD? Why, Richard?
Yes,
that's okay. It's not a hard question.
It talks about the destruction. It talks about the persecution.
It doesn't actually. It talks about persecution, but it doesn't talk about the destruction of what?
Persecution.
Doesn't talk about the destruction of Jerusalem, right? Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, the thing that I would look at is that in talking about Christ as a high priest, the author is exhorting us not to go back to those offerings which are continually made.
Present tense.
Yeah, he
continually being made.
It as an ongoing thing at the time the letter is written.
Yeah, in Hebrews 5:1-3, it says, "For every high priest taken from among men is appointed for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sin." It's talking about, so would it make as much sense to compare Jesus Christ to something that's already been destroyed?
No.
The temple's already been destroyed. In fact, he compares him to the high priest who goes into the temple once a year behind the veil to anoint the Holy of Holies and do what he's supposed to do, right? Well, he says Jesus Christ doesn't need to do that because he's done it once and for all, right? But the comparison doesn't carry as much power if the temple's already been destroyed. So most agree that they think that the book was written before 70 AD. There are a couple other hints in there. In chapter 8, verse 13, he says, "A new covenant he has made the first obsolete. Now what is becoming obsolete is growing old and is ready to vanish away." It's ready to go away. It's ready to disappear. Had it disappeared yet? It had not. So before 70 AD. Now, there's something interesting. Most Bible scholars say that Paul died in about 65 AD. And why is that important? Because Paul never mentions Timothy being in prison. And that's down in, where is it? Chapter 13. It's in verse 23. "I want you to know that our brother Timothy has been released." Released from prison. I don't know why mine doesn't say released from prison. He's been released recently from prison. Paul never mentions Timothy being in prison. In fact, it was Paul who was in prison and Timothy was coming to him. Now, what's the likely scenario, by the way? That Timothy went to Paul and was arrested and put in prison. and Paul was executed around the time Paul was executed. That's just speculation, sure. But the fact of the matter is Paul never mentions that. So if Paul died in 65 AD during the reign of Nero, and that's when a lot of the persecution was taking place, it's most likely that the book was written between 65 and 70 AD, so probably around 68 AD, when Nero was doing the persecutions. Comment? Okay. You just look like you were going to say something. I'm still running out of time. Where was it written? Let's see. No, I don't have that actually next. I have the audience next. By the way, where was it written? We don't know. It suggests that it was written in Rome. Those from Italy greet you. If not, it was written by people who were from Rome, or those were with them. The audience of the book. Is the audience clear for you who the book is to?
Yeah.
Is it the Jews? Or is it to Jewish Christians? It's not to Jews, obviously, right? Because these people have been saved. Now the thing is, so it's obviously to Jews, Jewish Christians, that's what I meant. And you can tell that because of the first verse. It says, God who at various times and in various ways spoke in times past to our forefathers. That's really tells you that it's Jewish Christians that we're talking about here. Now, the purpose of the book goes back to the audience of the book, right? The audience of the book were Jewish Christians who were in danger of doing what?
Going back to Judaism.
Right? And could you understand that? Could you understand how comfortable they could be with, how comfortable they could get going back to Judaism because it's what they grew up with? In fact, Peter practiced Judaism even as a Christian, right? You can go to Galatians 1 and see where he was eating all manner of stuff with the Gentiles, and then when the Jews came, he withdrew himself and only ate because he was with non-Jews. It was a bad thing for the Jews. And so even when in Acts 10, when he lets down the sheet, God lets down the sheet in a vision to him, he says, you know, there were all manner of creeping things in there. He says, arise. And he says, not so, Lord. I'd haven't put anything unclean in my mouth. And he's already been a Christian for a couple of years. They were totally comfortable with that. And so it makes sense that they might want to go back. What's the problem with going back? That's right. They were going to lose their salvation is what it was. If you want an argument about losing your salvation, this book is one of those books. Once saved, always saved? Uh-uh. Because they could have fallen away, and there's no way. And chapter 10 says, if you've fallen away, how can you crucify the Lord again? Right? And so the audience is obviously that. Some suggest it's Hellenized Christians or Hellenized Jews. There's some arguments for that. I don't know. They were immature. They should have by now been teachers, but they weren't, right? They should have been teachers by now, but now instead they're still hung up on the milk of the word. They had been Christians for a while, but they were immature Christians. You can tell that from the way that Paul addresses it. They were persecuted. You can see that in a number of verses, Hebrews 10, 32, 35. It's interesting in chapter 12, it says, you have not resisted unto bloodshed, but they had been persecuted. So that's another reason why they might have tried to go back to something more familiar, because Judaism was an allowed religion and Christianity under Nero was an illegal religion. So they might have wanted to go back just to avoid the persecution. By the way, do we ever get persecuted? So what can we learn from this book? What can we learn from this book? We're almost out of time, right?
Yeah.
Is it just for Jews? You ever want to know how great Jesus Christ is? Go read the book of Hebrews. If you want to know what to do in a time of persecution, go read the book of Hebrews. If you want to know why we get together as Christians, go read the book of Hebrews, right? That we're to gather to provoke one another to love and good works, right? So next week we're going to actually get into the actual not next week, because that'll be down either the week after. I'm planning on rotating every other week so I have enough time to prepare this class. I understand this was a little bit of speculation and stuff. I find it intriguing personally to think about some of these things. We don't know exactly when it was written. We do know who the audience is. We know what the purpose is. The purpose is to show that Jesus Christ is better in every way over the Old Testament way of worship. I've got friends who believe they're Messianic Jews, or can you be a Messianic Jew? I think you can, unless you value the law so much that you think that you have to do the things of the law. And impose that on other people, right? I've got some friends. Dennis Tompkins' sister is a person who believes that you need to keep the Sabbath. The book of Hebrews would suggest that that's not necessary because Jesus Christ is better than the law. And that's what we'll get out of it, the study. So thank you for your time and your patience.